This morning, we have the honor of hearing from our brother, Lon Garber. Lon and his wife, Val, have been faithfully coming to Providence for many years. They are no strangers to ministry, and he said, I can't share that story because he's going to share some of that. So, at this time, I am delighted to turn this over to Lon.
Thanks a lot. I get bored rather easily. My career path gives evidence of that. In my 20s and 30s, I was a software designer. I was in an age when nobody knew what software was. When I turned 40, the church I attended invited me to become a pastor. And so I left the software world, became a pastor. In my early 50s, God called Val and I to become missionaries. And whenever you tell somebody that you're a missionary, they want to know where. And so I would say, Namibia. And they would always say, where's that? And so I brought a map. There it is. It's in southern Africa. It used to be part of South Africa. By the time Val and I arrived and spent a year in the capital city of Windhoek, the country was only a teenager. It had only been a country for about 12 years. And we lived most of our time there in a little town north of there called Okahanya. Not Oklahoma, Okahanya. But that's all incidental. What you really need to know about me this morning is I'm a storyteller. I love telling stories. So this morning, I'm going to tell stories. Lots of stories. Mostly stories. You know, it's not going to be a fire and brimstone sermon. It's going to be a fireside chat. And so let's light the fire. You see, that was me when I was younger and handsome. And could still eat marshmallows. So get back, sit back, get comfortable, relax. I'm going to tell you a bunch of stories. In fact, I'm going to sit because I think telling stories sitting is the proper posture for just in a relaxed environment to tell stories. But before we do that, a little context. We're smack dab in the middle of a passage of Scripture, Matthew 5 through 7, that is called the Sermon on the Mount. I believe that that name sells Jesus' message short. It's not a sermon. It's not a collection of gentle suggestions, helpful hints, timely tips. It's a manifesto of how we build the kingdom. It is our marching orders for how we build the kingdom. Back in 1848, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels wrote their own manifesto. It was called the Communist Manifesto. And that manifesto has had a profound influence on the way the world looks, even today. Christ's manifesto was so much more important than that. It's our marching orders for how we get to play a role in building the kingdom. You know, Abby started us out, and she reminded us that the kingdom of heaven is not populated by the high and mighty. It's populated by the low and the meek. Then Noah reminded us that it's not our job to make Christ's kingdom great. Christ does that. It's our job to be righteous examples, salt and light in the world as Jesus makes his kingdom great. And then we went on. Hunter, not only did he tell us that the kingdom is not filled with lustful people. First, he reminded us that there are rules in the kingdom, not to be followed legalistically, but to be followed lovingly. And then Kenan reminded us that there is such a thing in the kingdom of restorative justice, where we play a role in restoring justice. And so I really admonish you, advise you, go back and listen to those sermons again. They aren't just helpful hints. There are marching orders. And I'm going to continue that today with this text. Jesus, in this text, is quoting the Old Testament law, and a rather arcane part of the Old Testament law, when he said, you've heard it said, when you make a vow, you make an oath, keep it. It's back in Numbers. And the reason he even brings it up is because the Pharisees and the scribes had adulterated the whole meaning of that. They had reduced it from, keep your word, stupid, to, it was all about the methodology of who you were allowed to swear to, who you weren't allowed to swear to. You know, when you swear to this person, you're bound by it. When you swear by something else, you're not bound to it. And I'm sure at that point in his manifesto, Jesus goes, duh, you've missed the whole point. It's not about methodology. It's about what is the meaning. And so this morning we're going to look deeper into what did Jesus mean when he said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. You know, Jesus had the ability to take very complicated subjects and make them very simple. So he just said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. So we're going to look at that. And we're going to look at it through stories. Jesus' kingdom, I believe, is built on four pillars of righteousness. Remember, we're supposed to be righteous examples to show people what the kingdom looks like. I have four pillars that I believe the kingdom is built upon. And the first pillar, oh yes, it's time to sit down. The first pillar is what I call the pillar of honesty. You know, we live in a society where the truth seems to have gone out of fashion. Many years ago, even Noel Coward, the famous playwright, said, it's discouraging to think how many people are shocked by honesty and how so few are shocked by deceit. It's the society we live in. Will Rogers, one of the wittiest, funniest guys who ever put on a pair of cowboy boots, once said, I'd rather be the man who buys the Brooklyn Bridge than the man who sells it. So, my best truth-telling story comes from Stuart Briscoe. He was a pastor for many years in the Milwaukee area, and he tells the story about his first day on his first job. He went to work as a teenager in a bank. And the banker comes to him and he says, well, Stuart, one of your jobs is to answer the phones. And when you answer the phone, tell them I'm not here. And naive Stuart said, well, okay, where are you going? And he says, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just really busy. I'm going to be in my office. I don't want to be disturbed. Tell them I'm not here. And Stuart said, well, sir, I can't tell them you're not here if you are here, can I? And the banker said, you can and you will. Stuart said, but that's not the truth. With a sigh, this banker tells him, I realize this is your first day on the job, so let me explain to you how the business world works. The boss, that would be me, gives the orders. The employee, that would be you, follows them. Tell them I'm not out. Tell them I'm out. Tell them I'm not in. Pregnant pause. Stewart's trying to absorb what he's just been told by his boss. And he says, sir, has it ever occurred to you that if I'll lie for you, I'll also lie to you? And I have no intention of doing either of those two things. Out of the mouths of teenagers comes profound wisdom. And he spent the rest of his life building a reputation as a truth teller. So much so that at the end of his ministry, he and his wife started a podcast, and it was called Telling the Truth. But my favorite story about telling the truth is a good deal closer to home. It's about my father. In 1947, my father went into the dry cleaning business without knowing a bit about dry cleaning. He learned on the job. And in the first years he was there, the chief of police started bringing his uniforms in to be cleaned. And my father said to him, Marion, his name was Marion Lowry, he said, Marion, as a service to the village of Englewood, that's Englewood, Ohio, not Englewood, Colorado, as a service to the village, I'm going to clean your uniforms for free. Now, I'd like you to, at the same time, in bring your own personal dry cleaning that you pay for, but I'm going to clean them for free. Well, at the time, Marion, the chief of police, was the only policeman in the village. But the village grew, and he hired a deputy. His deputy also brought his clothes in. And over the year, the village turned into a town, and it's now a small city. And dozens of police officers were bringing their uniforms in for my dad to clean them for free. It drove my mother bananas. Because she said, Merle, they're supposed to bring their own cleaning in that they pay for. Nobody ever does that. They only bring in their uniforms. And here's the point of the story. My dad looked at her and he said, I'm not concerned about whether or not they keep their word. I'm concerned about whether or not I keep my word. Okay? And he continued to do that for 40 years. This story not only illustrates my dad's truth-telling, it illustrates the second pillar that we're getting to, is in the kingdom of heaven, God wants us to build a reputation of keeping our word. Okay, let's look at the next pillar. It's the pillar of reliability. Simply stated, it means keep your word. In Psalm 15, it says, those who keep their promises, even when it hurts. See, oftentimes it hurts to keep your promise. He said, such people will stand firm forever. Frank Sonnenberg just said, if you can't keep a promise, don't make it. I recently reread Booker T. Washington's classic memoir called Up From Slavery. And in the introduction to that memoir, he tells the story of a slave that he met in his travels years after the slave had become free. But this slave, back in 1861, made a deal with his master. And the deal was that the slave would buy his freedom in installment payments. And in order to do that, the master allowed him to hire himself out to people, and then the money that he made by hiring himself out would go back to the master to pay for his freedom. Well, the Civil War ended, and the slave still owed $300. And so at the end of the war, he went back from Ohio, where he had been working, to Virginia, walked most of the way to pay the last $300 installment for his freedom. Now, when he was telling Booker T. the story, Booker T. says, but didn't you realize that the Emancipation Proclamation canceled that debt? You didn't know that debt. And the slave said, but I gave my word. And I've never not kept a promise. How in the world can I ever enjoy my freedom if I don't keep my word? T. telling the truth is important. keeping your word is important. So when Jesus said, let your yes be yes, he meant let your yes be an honest yes. Let your yes be a reliable yes. And the slave knew that even though the circumstances changed, it didn't change his word. He made a promise, and he was going to keep it. Such is the kingdom of heaven. The third pillar is the pillar of integrity. Simply put, it's called do the right thing. In Proverbs 28:6, it says, better to be a poor man whose walk is blameless than a rich man whose ways are perverse. Martin Luther King updated that quote when he said, right temporarily defeated is still stronger than evil triumphant. But I like best what William Penn said. I wish he'd say it to a lot of politicians in a lot of places these days. He said, right is right even when everyone is against it. And wrong is wrong even if everyone is for it. You know, when I started my software company, one of our primary core values was right can be differentiated from wrong. And right is to be followed always. Integrity. Do the right thing. Before Abraham Lincoln became president, he was a lawyer in Illinois. And one day he had a client come to him who wanted him to sue someone who thought for $600. Lincoln listened to the story. At the end of the man's story, he said, I can win your case. I can get you $600. But in so doing, I will also make an honest family miserable. So I'm not taking your case. I'm not going to earn any fee. But I'll give you this piece of advice for free. I want you to go home and think very seriously about how you can make $600 in an honest way. He did the right thing that day by denying a client. Everybody knows about the honesty and the integrity of Abraham Lincoln, but I'm going to tell you a story about my personal hero named Amadeo Giannini. I doubt that probably nobody in this room has ever heard of Amadeo Giannini. You can guess he was an Italian. He lived in North Beach neighborhood of San Francisco. North Beach was an Italian conclave, still is. North Beach neighborhood in South San Francisco is the neighborhood that gave us, if you're a baseball fan, the famous Joe DiMaggio. Grew up in North Beach. Well, before that, Amadeo grew up there, and like many Italians, their family business, which in his 20s he became the CEO of, was selling fruit and vegetables wholesale. Well, when he turned 31, Amadeo sold the company to his employees and retired at the age of 31. And everybody said, Amadeo, people don't retire at the age of 31. And he said, I do. He said, because when a man has more money than he needs, he becomes a slave to his money. And so Amadeo figured he had more money than he needed, and he retired. But the next year, his father-in-law died, and he agreed to take his father-in-law's place on the board of directors of a bank. And that's when Amadeo found out that bankers in the day didn't accept customers if they weren't already rich. As a matter of fact, they never loaned a dime to anybody who needed that dime. They only loaned to rich people. And so as a board member, he said, don't you think we should be taking accounts and loaning money to working class people? Because North Beach was filled with working class people. And the bank said, that's not how you make money. You make money from rich people. And so they refused. So Amadeo resigned his position on the board and opened his own bank. He called it the Bank of Italy. He started lending money to working class people. He took accounts from working class people. He started opening early and staying open late so working class people could actually do their banking. He allowed women, of all things, women in 1904 to open bank accounts. And he lended money. Let's hear it for the women. He lended money at below market rates because he thought that's money that working class people can afford to pay back. He did the right thing when all the other banks in town were doing the wrong thing. Then what happened in 1906, you history buffs? San Francisco earthquake. Okay? What banks in town the earthquake didn't knock over, the fires that came after it burned down. Most of the banks in town shut down, did not reopen for over a year. Amadeo said, that's not the right thing. Now's the time people need money. Now's the time they need money to rebuild their homes, to rebuild their life. And so in front of the rubble that used to have been his bank, he took two oaken barrels, put a plank across the barrels, and started lending money to the working class people of North Beach because it was the right thing to do. As you imagine, his bank became very popular, not only in North Beach, but other parts of the city. Not only in other parts of the city, but in other parts of California. He pioneered branch banking in California. Now, you probably never heard of the Bank of Italy because in 1930, he renamed the bank Bank of America. You may have heard of it. It's the second largest bank in the country. Someone, I think it was a reporter, once asked Amadeo, what's the hardest job you've ever had? And thinking back to his claim that when a man has more money than he needs, he becomes a slave to his money, he said, the hardest job I've ever had was to keep from becoming a millionaire. Let that sink in for a second. To keep from becoming a millionaire. Well, in 1949, Giannini died. And he left behind a bank that was worth billions of dollars. But he left behind a personal estate of only $500,000. Why? Because every time his net worth reached $1 million, he started giving stuff away. He did the right thing. His whole life, he did the right thing. You know, he learned to say yes to the right things and no to the wrong things. I think that's what Jesus meant too when he said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. So the kingdom of heaven is built upon the foundation of four pillars. There's the pillar of honesty. There's the pillar of reliability. Keep your word. There's the pillar of integrity. Do the right thing. But there's a fourth pillar. And I call that pillar the pillar of obedience. And what, in simple terms, it means say yes to God's yes. Say yes to God's yes. In Genesis chapter 6, God said to Noah, make yourself an ark. in the middle of a dry, arid land. So Noah did everything just as God commanded. He later said to Abram, leave your country. I know you're the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, but leave your country. Abram says, where am I going? God says, I'll tell you later. God said, leave. So Abram left, just as the Lord had told him. Fast forward in history to Moses. Moses had fled Egypt because he'd killed a man. He was out on the backside of the Midian desert for 40 years. And then the Lord appears to him in a burning bush, and the Lord said to Moses, go back to Egypt. And after some grousing, Moses started back to Egypt, even though he was a wanted man. Say yes to God's yes. Well, my yes came in February of 2002. God called me to move to Namibia. He didn't call me to go on assignment there, because everybody was saying, well, how long are you going to be there? And I said, God didn't say. He just said, move. And so we moved. We were there for 16 years. And if one person asked me why, hundreds of people asked me why. You're 50 years old. You're the pastor of a mega church in Orlando, Florida. Why in the world would you move to Africa? And so I gave them the honest answer. I said, because I don't want to smell like fish vomit. Yes, that got me a few befuddled looks and begged more information. And I said, let me remind you, God told Jonah to go to Nineveh. Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh, so he went the other way. He still ended up in Nineveh, but he got there smelling like fish vomit. Yeah. I'm going to say yes to God's yes. I was glad to go. Val was a little bit less inclined when I told her. You know, she started going around the house singing. Do you remember Scott Wesley Brown's famous missionary song? Please don't send me to Africa. She started singing that. You know, I mean, the chorus goes like this. I'll see that the money is gathered. I'll see that the money is sent. I'll wash and stack the communion cups. I'll tithe 11%. I'll volunteer for the nursery. I'll even go on the youth group retreat. I'll usher. I'll deacon. I'll go door to door. Just let me keep warming this seat. Well, she sang that knowing that we were going to Africa anyway, because God told us to go. And it was in Africa that I really learned to be a disciple. You know, in America, I taught about walking by faith. It's in Africa that I learned to do it. Day by day, moment by moment, as I watched God get me out of dilemmas that I had no idea how to handle. And He would protect me. He would provide for me. So many times. Almost on a daily basis. Now, sometimes storytellers write their stories down. If you'd like to know more about my time in Africa, I wrote a book. It's called The Leap, Living the Life You Dream About. It's about answering God's call. If you'd like that long story, because if I preached it now, we'd be here till 4 or 5 o'clock. I brought a couple of copies of the book with me. Now, if you'll promise to keep your word, I'll give you a copy. But you got to promise to read it in the next 3 months and come back and tell me what you learned. Okay? My final story, actually, it's also a true story. All of my stories have been true stories. And it happened less than a half a mile from where you're sitting right now. The story was told by a doctor who was going home one night after a long day at the office on Colorado Boulevard. at 5:15 in the afternoon. Anybody ever been on Colorado Boulevard at 5:15 in the afternoon? Him too, stuck in a traffic jam. Only for him, his car started to stutter, cough, and he knew it was about to die. So he ducked into a convenience store gas station at the corner of Colorado Boulevard and Bruce Randolph, just a few blocks from here. And before he could even pop the hood and look at his car to try and figure out what was wrong, he noticed a lady over by the gas pumps, leaning on the pump, sobbing. So he went over to her and he said, "Can I help you?" And she told him the story. She was traveling from Kansas City to California. Her life was falling apart in Kansas City. She was going home to live with her parents, she and her three kids. She was a single mom until she could get back on her feet. But the problem was she didn't have enough money to feed her car gas and her kids' food to get there. And so the doctor said, "Just a minute." He went into the convenience store. He paid for her gas. He went across the street. As you know, there's a McDonald's across there. He went into the McDonald's. He bought a bunch of food. He bought a bunch of gift certificates for more food. And he came back and gave it to her. And he turned around and started to leave. And she said, "Wait, wait. So what? Are you an angel or something?" And he turned around and he looked at her and he said, "Well," he said, "this is December. Angels are really busy this time of year. So sometimes God has to use regular people." You know, have you ever wondered if God doesn't sometimes have busy angels and he's calling you to be one of those regular people, to be an angel in somebody else's life? Well, he said, "So I got back in my car. I started it up. It started right up and purred like a kitten all the way home." Not surprised. Yeah, because he said yes to God's yes that day. He said, "I'm going to take my car to the mechanic tomorrow morning, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to find anything wrong with it." So there you have it. Bunch of stories. We play a vital role in the building of God's kingdom. So when you build a reputation for telling the truth, when you build a reputation for keeping your word, when you build a reputation for doing the right thing when other people aren't, and for saying yes when God tells you to do something, you don't have to swear an oath to anything because people believe you. Because your life convinces them that you're trustworthy. People see your life and they want to have that kind of life for themselves. One of my favorite stories when we were in Africa is about our African daughter, Isabella. We call her our African daughter because she lived with us for 15 years as family. And one day, one of the ladies in Val's Jewelry Project, her name is Fenny, she came to Isabella and she said to Isabella, "I don't know what you have in your life, but whatever it is, I want it." And that day, Isabella led her to Jesus. That's how the kingdom of heaven is built. So the next time you're tempted to maybe cut a little chunk off the corner of your integrity, think about your reputation as a kingdom builder and do the right thing. Let's pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And may you use each one of us to help you build it. Amen.